Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 287, recorded on February 13th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. And hey, I'm all excited. I'm awake and everything.
Sweet. Woohoo!
Have you registered that domain yet? Because you just did it again. Every time you say, or not every time, sometimes when you say Mac Observer, it sounds like Mac Absorber.
I know, it's funny that it sounded that way because I definitely
I just need to register.
Just
that.
Say it outright.
Yeah, and Michael, I really think you planted that in my brain in such a way that that I am now compelled to say Mac Absorber.
Yeah. I want to know what it's absorbing, but
you know, that was a whole early podcasting Adam Curry thing, right?
Was it?
The sort of implanting. Yeah, because I still
Adam Curry.
Know about Senseo.
About what?
Senseo.
I don't know what that is.
It was this Panasonic coffee system that predated, you know how everybody has the what's the
Keurig?
Keurig cup thing?
K-cup, yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of predated that. It was that kind of system, except you had to kind of like pack your own coffee in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a little coffee brewing system.
Yeah.
And, you know, Adam Curry knew all about this, you know, coming from traditional media and stuff like that, advertising stuff. So you can start to associate, you can get people to associate words with things, you know, in audio when you do that. So because we've said to people Mac Absorber on this podcast, probably everybody who listens to this podcast, when they hear Mac Observer, they think Mac Absorber.
Yeah, I do. That's why I said it. It's more fun.
So, it's, you know, you can subliminally implant word associations in people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. So it's a power we have as podcasters. It's like our little secret superpower.
It's probably
have the power.
The only superpower that we have.
Yeah.
No. We also have the superpower of being able to talk for hours on end about absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that is fun.
Yeah.
And you're Adam Christensen.
This is our blessing. This is our curse.
Adam Christensen of the MacCast.
Yes,
I had to officially intro you because it seemed rude otherwise. Although I wonder if you wanted to just start talking, you could probably just introduce yourself and get on with it.
Yeah,
that'd be fun. But so there's betas, more betas out. So we got the third beta of tvOS 9.2.
Does it seem like to anybody else that there's just a lot more beta releases than there used to be? Or is it just because there's nothing for the media to talk about, there's just more people reporting on beta releases?
Well, I think that these betas actually have some cool stuff in them. And typically, I very often talk about the betas, mention them, just to let people know that stuff is happening behind the scenes. And usually there's just nothing to say beyond there's another beta.
Well, it's usually so there's a beta out and it has bug fixes and performance improvements.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Now this one that for the Apple TV includes dictation now for Siri, which is incredible.
That's pretty awesome.
It's probably the best thing, the best new feature beyond Apple Remote or the remote app support.
I love, though, how a lot of the places are spinning, oh, now you can dictate your password login.
No, you can't.
And I'm thinking, I use 1Password. There's no way I'm going to be like, do you say #! !9, capital V, X, W, 2, 7, capital C, A, you know, for like 32 characters.
Yeah, but, you know, as much as that sounds like a dumb thing to do, I'm going to try doing that at least once.
See, I think it's going to be such a pain, which is I'm saying, no, you can't do that.
I mean, I'm
going
to do it just for fun, but I'm probably not going to do it ever.
I mean, what solved it for that was the last release or a couple of releases ago. I just used the remote app on the phone and then just
Yeah, I copy and paste.
So I think it's further down on the
password for Apple TV.
Yeah, it's
never going to happen. Cool.
I'm going to throw that out there.
So I think one of the coolest things that happened this week was that Eddie Q and Air Force One were on what the hell's his name?
John
Gruber's show. Gruber's show.
Yeah, the talk show. It's still called the talk show.
I think so. Where is that? It's somewhere in this list. Yeah, Eddie Q, Craig Federighi. They're both on the talk show, which is weird. I mean, it's not the weirdest thing because Gruber clearly knows people.
Well, he had them on before. This is the second time, right? Because he did the interview at...
He did Schiller. He had Schiller
WWDC,
on.
WWDC.
And I guess he's... Yeah, so they're palsy. So they did an hour talking about software, and you know it. I think they might have some bit of the reality distortion field. They know how to do that because I felt a lot better about the whole state of Apple after listening to that show.
Oh, so it was like therapy.
It was very therapeutic. So, did you guys listen to it?
I haven't not yet.
I
will be listening to it.
It's very good to listen to. It's one of those things that makes you realize that they're human and that they're trying to do really great things and they're constantly trying to improve and it makes it clear that they're not sinking into like mediocrity. It's just that our demands on them, on Apple as a whole, is just it's always constantly out of reach.
Mine aren't.
Well, maybe yours aren't.
You're saying the proverbial we, which is the Apple Macintosh fanboy community.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. I try to avoid that as much as possible, which is probably why I don't get interviews with Eddie Q and Craig Federighi.
Yeah. So they... one of the things they did discuss was the betas with new features, especially for the Apple TV and as well as the iPad with the, the iPad in the classroom stuff, all of that. And, mm-hmm. and they mentioned that they occasionally work on things that they really want to get out there before a major, beta release at like WWDC or something like that. And typically those things are those which don't necessarily affect developers. They said that, as far as like the Bluetooth keyboard support in the Apple TV goes, for example, that was one thing that they wanted to have in the Apple TV at the start. And I believe the same goes for the remote app, but they just didn't have time for it. So it was good that Gruber asked those sorts of questions. He directly asked, you know, was it something that you planned to have in and just didn't have time, or that you planned to not put in there and then rethought it and decided to put it in? And I guess it was something that they wanted to put in all along.
But did he ask the hard follow-up question, which is, historically, it feels like Apple would have delayed the launch to make sure that it was all in there and it was perfect. And now they seem to not be doing that anymore. So what's changed?
Yeah, he didn't ask that.
Now, have they always done that, or is that a perception we've created? Because it sure feels to me like historically we'll get a product and then we get an update and we're like, okay, now it's great.
I'm trying to remember.
Well, though, you can look at the original iPhone, and that didn't have copy paste, and it seems like one of those things that it should have always had kind of thing.
Yeah, that was historically, Apple always said they just hadn't really figured out exactly the right way to do it, though, right? It was sort of like one of those things they were going through iterations of how to do copy paste on a touchscreen device that in a way that made a lot of sense. And I still wish they would go back and look at how it was on the Newton.
Hmm.
Oh,
which,
yeah,
I thought was awesome, an awesome way to do it. Where when you would cut something, you'd select it and then you would just drag it to the side of the screen, and then it would be this little tab on the side, and then you could go wherever you wanted, and then you would just drag it back out. So it was like a little clipboard that you could throw stuff into. And I would imagine with iOS, you could even have like multiple little clippings.
Sure. Yeah, why
you know,
not?
That you could throw around. And I always thought that was
a great little way to do it. Of course, Apple still hasn't even done that with OS X.
Yeah. But yeah, so I guess you're right. Maybe it is a little bit of that perception. But it just seems like those two features they're kind of critical features. Like to me, they're ones that without having them there, it really detracted from the experience of the new Apple TV.
The Bluetooth keyboard support?
Not as much as not having the remote app ready.
Yeah, that one, there was not a follow-up on that.
How the keyboard input had to happen.
Yeah, there wasn't a follow-up on that, and I really wish there was. There had been, what they did comment on was the Bluetooth keyboard support, and based upon their numbers,
Yeah, I would agree with that.
They saw that there were quite a few people who used Bluetooth keyboards on their Apple TV, but as soon as the Apple TV 4 developer kits came out, the numbers basically went to zero.
Here's one.
And that's because that directly follows that pretty much everyone who is using a Bluetooth keyboard on their Apple TV was a developer. And once they got a hold of the Apple TV 4, which didn't have the support, it was clear that it was only developers.
You know what could totally fix the entire situation? Hmm. And I don't know why I didn't even think about it or it hasn't been talked about till now, is iCloud keychain integration. Like, why doesn't the autofill with iCloud keychain for passwords?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I mean, you could even set it up so that that to authenticate, you just do Touch ID on your iPhone. And then it grabs from iCloud keychain and you're done.
Yeah. Well, I think that the issue there is the authentication scheme, right? Because on our phones, you have the Touch ID and the
passcode. Set it up so that you do Touch ID. If you have an iPhone 6 or newer, you can authenticate for all of your apps and services on Apple TV directly from your iPhone. Just press Touch ID.
Well, I mean, and again, with iCloud keychain, though, it wouldn't necessarily even need to be that, because, I mean, once you've logged into iCloud keychain, then your keychain's unlocked, and then it can just autofill username and password from, you know, the keychain. I mean, that's how it works, like when you're logging in Safari or any other app. So, and a lot of that authentication, even in third-party apps, is going through just like, you know, JSON web UI stuff. So it's hitting a standard URL. So keychain should be able to pick up and go, okay, they're trying to log into Amazon.com. I know the Amazon.com login. It's this, and I can autofill this stuff. So I don't know. I'm sure they're, again, it's probably stuff that they're working on. It's probably just the same sort of thing. We didn't have time to get all that integration in with all the other stuff that we were doing. But I mean, then it does come back to what a lot of people, I think, who are a little more critical of what Apple's doing, and I'm a little in this group, is like, okay, so do you think that maybe you're not having time to finish up projects, you know, fully, that maybe this is a sign you're spread kind of thin, and maybe we don't want to like take on more and more like these big projects? And it's a balance. I get it. It's a balance that they have to play between, you know, having the next big thing ready and improving the existing line of products, and, you know, so I don't want to diminish, you know, the idea of like the gargantuan task that they have, but sometimes it feels like they're piling on stuff and it's not really clear why. And that's by design, I guess. We're not really supposed to know why.
Now, are they spread too thin, which I think actually is very likely, or are they setting unrealistic goals for themselves and not adjusting when they realize this is not a realistic goal?
Well, I think the not releasing the feature is the adjusting. So I would say it's not that.
Yeah, right? So they're spread too thin.
Well, and again, when they do that, what was good to hear from that interview, Michael, and I've always believed this to be true also, is that they do it in an intelligent way too, right? They go, okay, here's our feature set that we're trying to launch with. We're running out of time. what makes sense to delay and we can just roll in later. And Bluetooth keyboard support is definitely, you know, on that block when you look at the numbers and you go, you know what? Nobody's really using Bluetooth keyboards with their Apple TVs. I mean, there's three of us here. Do any of you? I don't use one, and I never have used a keyboard. I've never used one.
I thought you
because
were.
I had the remote app.
Adam, I thought you were the one who did that.
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have one. I know a lot of people who do. I'm not saying that people don't, but I think if you look at the total percentage of this many people own Apple TV. You know, 2% are using Bluetooth keyboards, or even if it's 5% or 10%, you know, and you're looking at other features and you're going, well, what can we cut or what can we delay? That's the thing that you're going to pick, right? You're going to go, okay, well, let's not have the engineers work on Bluetooth keyboard support and let's put their focus elsewhere. And then once we've launched, we can put them back on Bluetooth keyboard support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing they talked about was iTunes. Mm-hmm. Gruber was pretty blunt about saying that iTunes is and referring to Walt Mossberg's recent article that came out in the last week or so about how iTunes used to be good and now it's terrible. And I think most people can agree with that.
I've kind of had a change of heart about iTunes.
Yeah.
I know. Totally crazy. And actually, I worked for this on macOS Ken. I think it's coming up this weekend, so there's a teaser for you. But what I realized is that I'm torn. Excuse me. Should iTunes be split apart? And I don't know. But if it is split apart, I think that all the media stuff should be left together. So, you know, music, movies, all of that stuff in a single app. And then maybe the synchronization management goes into another app, but not split it out into all these separate media apps.
You can have iSync.
Yeah. You know,
Do we need a separate synchronization app? I mean, you don't have that on iOS, right? There's no centralized way of synchronizing. And I think fewer and fewer people, like when I talk to people about, hey, plug your iPhone in or your iPad in and sync it to iTunes. Like, they're like, what? You're crazy. Like, yeah. I never do that. That's freaking insane.
Since when could you do that?
Yeah. Right. So it could just be something that's in the operating system invisibly running in the background. I mean, you don't need to babysit or see that process at all.
Nobody really cares. Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. So what they addressed was kind of both of those at the same time. The first thing that I thought was very fascinating was so Gruber brought up the idea of breaking apart the apps into, well, the app into multiple apps for different functionality. And what Eddie said is that they kind of have, that's what they were trying to do with the current version of iTunes, where it's kind of insane that you have effectively many different modes, you know, a music mode, a movies mode, TV shows and all that, which, right. I mean, I think they probably agree at this point that was a horrible idea. It's insane. It makes me crazy constantly where I'm like, you know, I'm listening to music and I want to go into the app store. So I click iTunes store and then I search for some app and it's not in there. And I go, oh, I'm not in the app store. I have to click on, you know, the apps button then I'm back in my app library and then I have to click on app store and then I have to search for it all over again. And it's just insane.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So the other thing that they said is they've got some stuff. They've got something that will address that they're going to be talking about at WWDC.
Well, I'm all for this philosophy of just match. Why not just match what they have on iOS? So you have videos, you have books, you have
it works.
Music, you have
It makes sense on iOS. It's fine.
And it would make sense on the Mac desktop too.
Yeah, I mean there are
and
a couple
we'd
situations.
Lose the stupid. We'd finally lose the stupid iTunes name. Because iTunes has only like 1/5 of it is tunes.
Yeah.
Right? It's still called
I could see changing the name of the app. Yeah.
Well, but if you change the name of the app, what do you call it?
Recognition.
iMedia? No. You know, but again, I think it just becomes
music.
Here's the music app, the videos app, the books app. No. Just like
we do have the books app already, and it's weird that
true
It's strange that it's still that there is an audiobooks option in iTunes. That is weird. Have you noticed that, guys? There's audiobooks built into the Books app on iOS.
Right, but not on the Mac.
Yeah. No, I hadn't noticed that.
It's totally strange.
I really don't do any book stuff on my Mac. I do occasionally. It's very rare. Like if I've downloaded a manual for something and I need to have that up on a big screen while I'm doing something else, then yeah. But that's about it, and that doesn't hardly ever happen.
Yeah, I don't use iBooks on the Mac either. It's almost always on the iPad. Yeah, I don't know. It's a strange position for them to be in. I understand why it happened. I mean, the history and the chronology of it totally makes sense. But what it's like any app. I mean, how old is iTunes? The problem is you've got a code base that is just like decades old.
That goes back to SoundJam.
Yeah.
SoundJam.
And it's been had stuff bolted on. And anybody who's a developer has been in this situation. Apple's in an extreme version of it, but I mean, anybody who's been a developer that has a piece of code that they've worked on for more than, you know, 5 years or so knows what it's like. It's like, oh my God, you know, it could be a website, it could be anything. It's like, it's become this monster, Frankenstein's monster of like, oh, we'll just bolt this on and we'll bolt that on. And, you know, you need to add new functionality and look at it. And you're like, how do I even undo this thing? Like, the minute I try to undo it, all this stuff is going to break.
Well, it's one of those things where, as they're adding on features, the reason they're bolting stuff on is because they look at the two options. Either you bolt it onto iTunes or you make its own thing. And one of those takes a hell of a lot more time.
Yep.
And means yep. that the product that you've been working on that just needs this one little thing that iTunes can provide, or we could build out this entire giant thing that really, you know, shouldn't have been a giant consideration of this product in the first place. It would take way more time to do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I think a lot of times the fanboys forget that, you know, Apple, as much as, you know, they give us amazing magical stuff, they do still live in the real world, and they're dealing with real issues. And that's why it's cool, like, these for Apple to be a little more open on the PR side and do things like this Gruber interview. It gives you those, it at least gives you those insights, like, okay, these guys aren't idiots. They have thought about this stuff. They're not, they're not superhuman. They can't, like, shift space and time to make things happen. And sometimes it feels like the fanboys think that that's how Apple operates. Like, they can do anything. They're Apple computer.
Well, you know, the thing that really got me in the interview was when Eddie brought up a situation where they were talking about how they're constantly testing the latest software. They do things like every once in a while they'll actually purchase their next Mac on the online store and experience how the emails work and all the follow-up and what the entire experience is like. Mm-hmm. And doing the migration assistant and all that stuff themselves. And Eddie brought up a situation on his Apple TV where he's using the family sharing, and he went to found a movie, and went to purchase it. And a dialogue came up saying, someone in your family plan has already purchased this movie. Would you like to purchase it again? And he's like, that's insane. Why would we ask you such a stupid question? Why not just play the movie?
Right.
And
yes.
And he's like, I called Craig and we talked about it and we're going to get it fixed, kind of thing. Or, you know, that sort of thing. Like a story of how he found some bug on one of his iMacs and he thought it would be really difficult to reproduce. And so he just took the Mac and dropped it at Craig's house. He like threw it in his car and drove it over to Craig's house and said, work on this.
You know, sometimes it's good to be the king.
Yeah. Yeah. So it made me feel a lot better about the situation, that they're not just sitting around just raking in dough and thinking about how awesome they are.
Did you ever really think that was going on, though? I've never thought that was going on.
Well, I mean, if you read enough like stuff on Reddit and YouTube comments and...
Again, yeah. See, the fanboys go insane. They think like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know what they think.
It was a really grounding experience for me listening to that, that podcast, especially, I mean, even though I wasn't nearly as overzealous as a lot of those fanboys, it was a very grounding experience for me. And I recommend listening to that episode. It was very nice. There's a third watchOS beta, watchOS 2.2 out, which it's probably just has improvements, beta, bug fixes. And of course that includes the ability to pair more than one Apple Watch to a phone.
That's just, you know, so that's pretentious.
It's a cool thing, but at the same time, I'm wondering how many people really are doing that. I say that I know someone that actually does need to pair to Apple Watches. And what they've been doing is backing up their watch and then restoring the other watch from the backup.
That's crazy.
And yeah, well, it's the only way they could get the data across. And, or to actually have two watches that they could pair. And it's because they had their own personal watch, but they had another one that they needed to use for business.
Well, thank goodness Apple is solving that.
Yeah. So,
well, that must really be what's driving that. If that is, that's a really interesting thing to think about too, because it's something I would not have thought about, is are companies buying Apple Watches and issuing them to, say, executives or employees like they do iPhones. And I would have never thought of that being an application, but maybe there are applications for that. I don't know.
I think there probably are.
Yeah,
and there must be more applications than we realized, because otherwise, why would this be something that's happening right now?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be being driven from like something like that. Or it's just the one percenters who are buying gold Apple Watches. I don't know anybody personally who has two Apple Watches.
Nope. Well, I mean, I guess you could do it now with all the sales that are going on right now. So there's a 4-day, at least at Best Buy. I think there are other places too right now that have
Apple Watches for $50. I'll buy a second one for $50.
I would buy one for $50.
Just to say that you had one. No, it looks like the cheapest Apple Watch you can get is, I want to say, $250. So you can get a 38 mil. Otherwise, you can go for the 300.
Well, world you live in, I don't have another $250 to spend on just an extra Apple Watch, so I don't have to swap bands or whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't live in that world either.
I can't be inconvenienced by pushing that button and sliding out. I mean, God, that takes like 30 seconds.
I'm not an animal.
Yeah. As far as what's new in the third beta of iOS 9.3, Verizon can do Wi-Fi calling. So that's cool. And there's some kind of T-Mobile bug fix.
Yay.
Yay. Let's see what we have. This is cool. There's a new bill that has been introduced into Congress that would block state level efforts to weaken or dissuade phone makers from implementing encryption.
Yeah. Federal this government's all mad. They're like, that's only our domain to mess with.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. I think a lot of people are looking at this saying, yes, the federal government is standing up for us and protecting us from losing our privacy. No, the federal government wants to have a unified set of laws for breaking privacy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And they know if states get their own laws in place ahead of the federal government, then
it's
going to
be a
trickier
mess.
God, am I listening to No Agenda suddenly? What happened?
No, I mean, that's the reality, though. I mean, because we already know the federal government has come out and said, I mean, NSA and all those guys want to make sure that this encryption isn't a problem for them as well.
Yeah,
so,
well, especially James Comey.
They're not changing their stance on this with this. That's not what this is about.
No.
No, it's not. Because the problem is you get state laws in place, and then when you want to do the federal thing, you've got to deal with unraveling all of the state ones that conflict with whatever the federal one ends up being.
Right. So it's much easier just to block the states from creating their own laws and then the federal government can create its laws, and it's done.
I mean, they're dealing with it right now with the legalization of marijuana. I mean, it's a problem because you've got a federal now conflict, a conflict of federal laws with state laws.
Right. And and the way the system works, I mean, technically, all the states that have passed their marijuana laws, they can't be considered valid laws because you can't have laws at a lower level, meaning like at a state level or a city level, that are less restrictive than at a higher level.
Right.
And that's exactly what we have. And so now we have this mess where all these states are doing this, and the federal government has to figure out how to address the whole thing, and how do you create a unified marijuana law. And, yeah. So it makes sense that they would want to block states from passing their own backdoor laws for encryption, yeah, so they can have control over their own.
And the difference, like on something like the marijuana laws, is it's seeming like the federal government's just not going to worry about that. They're going to let the state laws stand. And so far, they haven't really been bothered by it. But something right. like this encryption thing, because it's, you know, in the federal government's eyes, it's a national security thing. It's you know, at that level, they're more interested in it. So they're getting more involved.
Right. So, Michael, if you were all excited about the federal government taking up the mantle of let's protect users' privacy, I'm sorry that we had to shoot that down for you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I guess I'm not listening to enough No Agenda these days. So
clearly.
Yeah, there are
too
many episodes.
People that disagree with us, but that's kind of the way. That's when I saw this story, I got excited at first, too. I'm like, okay, good. Thanks. And then I started to really think about, okay, what is going on and why? And it seems to me that it's more about.
Of course, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at least they'll be shut down for a while. I mean, it'll slow things down in the states, which is good.
Right.
I mean, that's good.
And I think for companies like Apple and Google, and for end users like us, who would take up arms, so to speak, and fight a law like this, if it's passed, you know, file lawsuits against the government in court, so that we could file lawsuits in court, like we'd file them in Starbucks.
Right.
Am I saying? Yeah. Anyhow, so they would file lawsuits.
Maybe.
You never know. But being able to file a lawsuit that targets a single government entity as opposed
right.
to multiple states will be much easier.
Yes, yeah. So it'd be much easier to lobby the federal government, much easier to fight one single entity.
Yes.
So
in that sense, this is a good thing, Michael.
And we can unify, you know, maybe there are tech companies outside of California that also are opposed to this sort of thing.
And again, the short-term impact is we won't have to deal with state laws being passed.
Right. You know, that's assuming anything gets through, but we'll see.
Yeah, assuming this works.
I think this will get through fairly quickly because there's a very loaded agenda behind.
Yeah, they want to shut this down quickly because, you know, if one, two states start doing it, then other states are like, hey, those states did it. Let's, you know, and then there's a domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so very quickly you could have a lot of state laws in the federal government. I think they don't want that.
Right.
They don't want to have to deal with that.
Yeah. So speaking of lawsuits, Seattle-based law firm Fow Cochran something something PVCA PCVA they followed through with plans to bring a class action lawsuit against Apple over the Error 53 controversy.
The error that has not been a secret ever since it was introduced, and yet people are flipping out over it now.
I'm changing my stance. I'm going 180 on this.
Okay.
Cool.
So first of all, I disagree with your statement that it's been something that's been known, because it hasn't. So the iPhone 5S, as we talked about last week,
it's been known to repair centers.
It's been known that replacing the Touch ID sensor would disable Touch ID.
Correct.
4 years, right, since the iPhone 5S. And we're in 6S, so that's, what, 4 years? 3 years, something like that? Mm-hmm. But suddenly, with this latest OS update, Apple is bricking the phones.
No, it's just happening more frequently now.
I mean, I would love to see more data. This is a very strange situation because there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of speculation, and not a whole lot of
facts. Including on our part, right? Have you interviewed Apple authorized repair centers or geniuses over the procedures? And
you know, maybe I should. There's actually, it's weird. There's an actual Apple authorized place around here. And I'm not talking about iFixit. I should talk, you know, I should knock on iFixit store and talk to them, although they're probably going to tell me something that's
all of our info is coming secondhand, right? Not first.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, the fact remains that up until this point, the phones weren't bricking. The Touch IDs just stopped working. So it was clear that the Touch ID sensors were linked to the board in some way, as Apple has pointed out. But until now, we haven't seen you lose in total functionality of the phone.
I'm not sure that's accurate, Michael.
I'm pretty sure it is. And it hasn't been... It's not set up in a way, according, and I've looked through Apple's security documents, and based on those, Touch ID is supplemental to passcodes. It is not something where you have to have both working in order for it to be a secure situation. And the way that the Touch ID authentication process works is the Touch ID is simply a scanner, which then sends that data to the secure enclave, which then does its rendering of the fingerprint in a way that it can read and comparing to the hashed data in there and all of that stuff. So it's not a situation where if you had this, malicious Touch ID sensor that could just say, yeah, he's cool, it wouldn't just work, right? Because the secure enclave is the one that says, yeah, it's cool. It is in charge of its own.
I just found an Era 53 post on iFixit from 2014.
Okay.
So, 2 years ago.
And what does it say?
That it was bricked. And here's one from iCracked from 2000. Well, that was 2015, so that was back in November. That's recently. But, I mean, it goes back. And unfortunately, I can't go all the way through. I can only see what's on Google right now because iFixit is down.
Oh, that's, whoops. That's funny. Well, I think
they replaced the site's Touch ID sensor. That must be what happened.
No, it's working for me. I think the interesting thing is, though, it's clear that the phones do work without Touch ID working. Right?
Yes, so it seems. Well, you can set up an iPhone where you say don't use Touch ID.
Yeah, now, and that's what I think.
But that's not the same thing as saying Touch ID isn't working. Yeah. You're just not using it.
So, yeah, this guy's phone was bricked in December 2014 after doing an update with an Era 53.
Yeah, but it's clear that, okay, so for whatever reason, the Era 53 stuff has only recently become a bigger issue.
Yes, that is true.
But again, that's likely because you have a lot more phones that have Touch ID sensors in them than you did in 2014.
I suppose that's true. And yes, it is also true that repair centers have known that if you want to maintain Touch ID functionality, that when you're replacing a screen, you need to move the Touch ID sensor over. And they have been doing that.
Repair it, and like not fix it, but...
No. Not
as in pair again.
Yeah.
No. They didn't. They don't know how to do that. This magical thing that Apple talks about. They literally. So they have a broken screen. They pull they unglue the old Touch ID sensor and glue that into the new screen.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Then it would still be the same sensor that was originally paired with the Secure Enclave in that device.
Right.
Right. So you wouldn't have to do the repairing, because you're not dealing with a new Touch ID sensor.
So I think ultimately Apple needs to figure out how to make this work so that people who have either busted Touch ID sensors or replaced them, that their phones don't brick. It doesn't make sense that you need
Apple
to brick the phone.
Apple does know how to do that. They will not brick if you replace the Touch ID sensor and you go through the repairing process to pair the new Touch ID sensor with the Secure Enclave.
Well, then they need to make it known what the pairing process is.
Why?
Why not?
Because that opens up security. I mean,
I don't think it
does. You want to have authorized centers who are, you know, gone through Apple training, who know what's going on, know that. I mean, that's the point, right?
Well, what's the point of, I mean, it's not like they're not going to tell. Like, all you have to do is unplug the battery and wait 3 seconds. I mean, sure.
Again, I think you can find that information if you want to know. And this is not going to be a problem moving forward, because the third-party repair centers who don't know this procedure now know that they have to know this procedure because of this story, and they're going to figure out how to do it. So this is going to become less and less of an issue moving forward.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not something that requires a class action lawsuit to get Apple to fix.
I think Apple does need to do something about it. There's no reason for it to brick the phone. I don't think that the security is... I don't think it's necessary to brick the phone for it to remain secure.
What happens when you go to the repair center and they use some knockoff janky Touch ID sensor?
Then it doesn't work.
The Touch ID doesn't work, or
right,
the phone doesn't work?
Yeah, the Touch ID doesn't work. I mean, as it's been going, as it has been for a while, and with the guy in the story, for example, his phone worked just fine until he went and did an update, and now he just can't use his phone. And when he did have the other knockoff Touch ID, it just didn't work. I don't see why there's a reason to make sure the Touch ID is intact in order to let the phone work at all.
Mm. Well,
even if you're doing a complete nuke and pave, there's no data there to save.
My guess is that there's something that we don't know about the way Touch ID interacts with the rest of the system, and because of the piece that we don't know, it doesn't seem reasonable for Apple to brick the phone. If we knew the missing element, then we'd be able to look at this and go, oh, that makes sense. Because it doesn't seem like something Apple would just arbitrarily do and say, oh, if the sensor doesn't work, we'll just brick the phone. There has to be some technical reason behind the decision to do that.
Well, I have no problem with this.
This is obviously, in my mind, there's a reason for it to exist. It's a security feature. Apple wants to make sure that the repair was done properly and with the proper components. And by throwing up this error and bricking the phone, it causes the customer to contact Apple and be like, what the hell? And
well, then I think in that situation,
get looked at and repaired properly.
You should then be able to go to the Apple store and say, hey, this is what happened. What do you charge for a new home button to do it the right way? And they say, you know, $50 or whatever. And then you get it done the right way. But in at least this guy's case, and I think that this was probably handled poorly and improperly, he was told there's nothing that they can do. And I think that was, I think as we discussed last week, probably incorrect.
Yeah, well, incorrect, but also correct, because he had an unauthorized repair done.
Yeah, I mean, that is
so it voids the warranty.
Yeah,
it voids the warranty, but you should still be able to pay to have it fixed.
Yes, I will grant you that.
And I believe that that is true, that Apple is always willing to take your money in order to repair it out of warranty.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. But the out-of-warranty repair costs are also more expensive, and they're on a different schedule, and people might not be happy with the price that gets quoted.
Yes, yeah. That's possible, too.
I don't know. This doesn't seem like it's that big of an issue for that many customers. And yes, I might agree with you that Apple could handle it a little bit better, but I don't think the error existing or the breaking the phones is the issue. At least for me. I don't really have much.
I think the big problem, which I know I said this last week, is communication.
Yeah.
Apple should have done something earlier to make it clear how this whole process works and spun it as a security feature.
Yeah, I mean, they had their opportunity to respond, and it's clear that the response was not proper.
Well, we don't know what the response is yet. And Apple is known for taking their time to respond to what the media looks at as big issues. So we may be seeing a response from Apple at some point in the near future. So the fact that they have not issued an official response, to me, does not indicate that they are not going to.
Okay. Moving on. I don't know where the story comes from. That I guess there were rumors that the next EarPods would have noise-canceling capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they won't. Mm-hmm. Although it's being planned, they believe. This is from a Barclays analyst. He believes that we won't be seeing noise-canceling capabilities in the next EarPods, that they may be waiting for the 7S. I guess it makes sense that you would want a lightning headphone for this to happen. And especially it would be much cheaper to have the technology happen inside the phone as opposed to in the headphones, right? Because you wouldn't have to put all the smarts in there.
I have a theory on this. Okay. On why there's confusion on these stories. Because there's a bunch of stories floating around the EarPods that are conflicting. I think I read another story this week of somebody saying, oh, there's not going to be wireless EarPods included with the iPhone. They're only going to be wired ones. And it really comes down to, I think, a price point. I think Apple is developing two sets of EarPods, potentially. One being a wireless set that probably has higher-end features like noise canceling. That's an extra accessory that you can buy as a more premium set of EarPods. And then there's going to be the cheap EarPod with the lightning cable that's included in the box. That's just going to be EarPods that use a lightning cable.
I like this theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am totally on board with you, Adam.
Yeah, and I don't even know if the wireless ones will happen or not. I think it's something Apple's developing and looking into, but it may be even something that they just look at as an accessory and go, no, you know what? We're just going to go with Beats Wireless. We've got all kinds of options there for people, and they could stick that route. You know, whether or not they'll do an Apple-branded set of EarPods, I'd love to see that because it sounds like they're going to be cool without the, you know, the rumor is they're going to be wireless, so they'll just be two little pods. You put one in each ear, and you have no wires at all, which could be awesome.
It could be, but I'm...
Yeah, and we're seeing products like that already.
I'm wondering if the type of ear pod they want to build, if it's... if it would not be large enough to accommodate the type of battery that they would need to achieve the right kind of battery.
Well, again, I think this is something they're looking at different designs of a wireless EarPod, and we're hearing about all these different possible specs, like they're going to be noise canceling. But anything like that is going to be in a higher-end premium headphone. It's not going to be in the $20 EarPods or $30 EarPods that, you know, are going to come in the box. There's no price justification for it. So it doesn't surprise me to say EarPods are not going to be noise canceling. Of course they're not going to be noise canceling because that adds cost. Right. And they're not going to give you a set of noise canceling EarPods just in the box. It's going to have to be something you buy extra.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Let's see. Dr. Dre is apparently going to be starring in Apple's first original television series.
So glad we're talking about this.
Yeah, I thought you would want to talk about it. So according to...
I'm super glad we're talking about it because of what I've read about what the content of this show is going to be and just the irony of the apps that Apple blocks in the App Store and then they're going to throw this out on us.
Yeah, so according to The Hollywood Reporter, the series will be called Vital Signs. It will be a dark, semi-autobiographical drama based upon Dr. Dre's life and...
with a ton of sex, violence, and nudity.
Well, at least in this one episode that they're talking about. Yeah, there was an orgy scene.
So can I? Does that mean I can now put out my role-playing orgy app on the App Store?
I think, yeah. I think
I will buy the crap out of that, Adam. You get that out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know that would never fly.
I know.
Like, they blocked Playboy, and then they're going to let this go?
They block sexual health-related apps.
And I guess they're looking at it. I mean, it's maybe not fair to compare apps and TV, you know, television, because they do, you know, they do have HBO Go and they have Showtime and they have all this other stuff that you can get on the entertainment side. And they do have those entertainment apps. But it's interesting to me how they're segregating games and informational apps and treating them differently in terms of their sexual and violent content versus quote unquote entertainment apps.
Well, and you can make the same comparison with, as you said, the stuff that is on HBO Go or even the stuff that's in the iTunes store. I'm sure there's plenty of nudity in stuff that you can find on the iTunes store. I mean, you can buy Straight Outta Compton, which definitely has nudity in it.
Right.
For example.
But that line now, when Apple starts producing their own content,
yeah.
I mean, it's one thing when it's a third party. Now you've got Apple producing their own content. And I get why they're doing it. That's the kind of show that the American public and maybe more people around the world are into. You know, I mentioned Game of Thrones, and I some of that content I really don't like. I like the show for a lot of other reasons. I'm not in it for that content, but there are a lot of people around the world that's what they want to go for. And it's probably, if Apple's going to start producing their own content, it's going to be the thing that's going to be the most successful, because I guess people like to be shocked and horrified. It's a thing that I personally don't understand on a lot of levels.
It sells.
But it sells, yeah. So I get why that's what it sounds like. But just immediately when I read the story, I thought, wow, this is just, it's even blurring that line further, because as an app developer, I'd be very confused. It's like, well, okay, so if I did my whole app as an entertainment TV show and put it out there, would you let it go through or not? And that'd be interesting for someone to do, is if it was an app that was just like a collection of short films or movies that contained this kind of content, original stuff, would the App Store reviewers let it through or not? And then if they didn't, why would they let something like HBO through or Apple's own show like this through and not something from just, you know, an unknown director, say? And I don't even really know. I don't even know if somebody could just do an app like that. If it would even, not even excluding the content rules, but like, you know, there's certain guidelines for what an app has to be. But if I had a collection of, you know, short films, say, that were on my website, and then I just wanted to put together an app that showed those same short films, would they let it through? And if the content of those films were extremely sexual and violently graphic, would I run afoul of the guidelines?
My guess is yes, you would run afoul of the guidelines.
Yeah.
Unless
HBO doesn't, Showtime doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're big names and there's big money. But if you and I put together a series that we wanted to sell through our app, and there was a lot of graphic sexuality, graphic violence, which would make for a very interesting podcast show, mm-hmm. I'm sure Apple would turn it down. I mean, reject it.
Yeah. And I bet you they'd reject it even if it was as done as a video podcast. So podcasts would also be treated differently than entertainment content. So again, it just shows that they're blurring the line, and I think it could come back to kind of get them. And we're going to see more people challenging this. I would challenge this if I was producing that kind of content. I don't, and Jeff, as interesting as it is, I have no interest in producing that kind of content personally. But
I would
love to see somebody try and see what happens. And I would fully support them if they were critical of Apple and blocking that stuff because of, you know, things like this. And we don't know that this Dr. Dre thing is happening, but I believe it probably is.
Yeah. Yep. So
it sounds messed up. It sounds like a show that I would not be interested in at all.
Yeah. Did you like Straight Outta Compton?
I no, because that's, again, a show that I would not be interested in, or a movie that I would not be interested in at all.
Okay. I very much enjoyed that.
I haven't watched it. Not that I'm opposed to watching it. It's just a much lower priority for me than a lot of other stuff happening in my life.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And it's not that I'm opposed, again, to that kind of content, just to be clear to people. Like, I like Pulp Fiction, and I like a lot of Tarantino films, right? But even there, sometimes, for me, it goes beyond a line that I'm really comfortable with, and I kind of go, did I really need to see that, or did that really drive the story forward? So I'm usually there for a good story and that sort of thing, and a lot of the graphic violence and graphic sexuality is... it's definitely not why I'm tuning in, but I know a lot of people tune in for those reasons, so...
Yeah. Okay, and so I guess we buried the lead. According to 95 Mac, Apple is on target to start selling the iPhone 5 SE. I don't know if it's going to be called that still. The new iPad Air and some new watch bands on March 18th after an event on the 15th.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great.
We've talked about that the last couple shows.
We've
right?
got some dates though. Dates.
We did. We hadn't thrown out the dates yet.
Yeah.
I forget. These dates have been around for the last week or so. So
yeah, and the iPad Air 3, right? Yeah.
Right. Yes.
The mini iPad Pro.
The mini iPad Pro.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll take one. As we mentioned before, we'll very likely have the smart connector, the little 3-dot contact thingy. And
so that means a new keyboard's coming.
Yeah. And probably support the Apple Pencil.
It needs to.
I think it definitely needs to. I see tons of these Windows tablets out there, and they're not giant, but they support dope pen input stuff, and that needs to be on the iPad now.
Yeah, I think it needs to be there. I don't know if it'll ever need to be there on the mini, but I see no reason why it couldn't eventually be on the iPad mini as well.
Yeah, I'm not visualizing a good use case for it on the mini, but that doesn't mean there isn't a good use case for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for taking notes, I would imagine.
Definitely.
You know, just handwritten notes. Yep. People would appreciate that on the mini. Yeah. And even if it's just that application.
Like a legal pad kind of thing? Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I could see that.
Okay.
I mean, you're a field reporter, you know, and you just prefer that versus typing. A lot of times it's faster, right? You want something really ultra mobile.
Sure.
Or you're a doctor and you want something that can just slide in your lab coat pocket.
Yeah.
Those things have big pockets.
They do.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, so picks.
Picks.
Jeff, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. My pick is a sleep tracker that I've been testing for a few days now, and it's called Bedit. And it's a hardware app combo for your iPhone and Apple Watch. And it's different from from every other sleep tracker that I've tested, because it doesn't rely on something you strap to your wrist, and it doesn't rely on your iPhone for the tracking. It has its own sensor with this big long strip that lays across the midpoint on your torso would be. And so that goes under the sheets. And then it talks to your iPhone via Bluetooth, and it monitors your sleep patterns. It can track your heart rate when you're in bed, and it will track whether or not you are snoring, which is a really important thing to track for people that have sleep issues, because that can be a key to helping figure out if someone is having apnea issues.
Yeah.
And it just collects all this really good data about how you're sleeping, and then just presents it in this way that's really great for just being able to parse through what's happening every night. So it's a lot of really good data, and it's an amazingly powerful and flexible sensor system. And compared to anything else that I have tried, this far exceeds the accuracy and types of data that are collected. And it's like $150.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the downside is, if you travel a lot, you're not taking this with you. I suppose you could, but that's not what it's designed for, because the sensor strip that lays across your mattress, it actually has adhesive on it. So it sticks in place.
What about... I would imagine you put it on your mattress, not on the cover.
Right, yeah. So what I did when I got mine was pull the sheet back, I pull the mattress pad cover back, and then just stuck this right on my Casper mattress, laid everything back down, and that's it. So all you do at night is tap a little button on the app that says sleep, and you can have multiple alarms set so that, like on the weekends, maybe you don't want to get up as early, or you don't even want an alarm. But on weekdays, you need to get up a lot earlier, so you can set these different alarms, and then it does the smart thing like every app calls it smart sleep or smart wake or whatever, where it's tracking your sleep pattern, and then you have like a half hour window before you need to get up where it picks the right point in your sleep cycle to wake you up. So it does like everything you need. And it gives you really great data. And for someone like me that has chronic, serious sleep issues, this thing is really cool, because it's giving me better data about my sleep than I've ever had before. $150.
Nice.
All right, top that, Adam.
I'm not going to be able to top that.
Is that a Teen Witch reference?
What?
Never mind. Go ahead, Adam.
All right. I was going to do this, but I got to find a better photo. So what I have is something from Microsoft and their Garage Labs. And it's an app called Fetch. And it's a fun little thing where it claims to be able to identify the breed of your dog. So what you do is you take a photo, you open up the app, you take a photo of your dog, and then it will analyze it using a bunch of, you know, like data points, basically scans the image, and then maps it against a giant database of all the different kinds of breeds of dogs, and then it'll try to identify what breed your dog is.
Does it work with cats?
It does. You can point it at your cat, and then also I think the funner feature though is you can point it at yourself.
And it'll tell you what dog breed you are.
Yes.
Cool.
And so I was trying to grab a picture of Jeff, but it says I don't have a high enough resolution one of Jeff, so I was going to see what breed Jeff was.
Oh, well, then I should send
in
you
in real that. Time here.
What's it called?
It's called Fetch.
Oh, Fetch.
Oh, here we go. I got one.
Oh, good.
Let's see. It's Jeff holding hot sauce, so we'll see what it does.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, so that's an older photo of me.
Yeah. I couldn't find a newer one. I'm just doing it on the fly here. So he is a golden retriever. Gets along with just about everyone. Strong and active, gentle and eager to please.
Yep. That's Jeff.
Oh, I'm so sweet.
Yeah, so there you go. It's just a fun, goofy app. It's funny, though, because I tried it with my dog, which is, he's a little Chihuahua Jack Russell mix. And I think he came out as a Great Dane, a Chihuahua, some other kind of terrier that is not even close. So, and it claimed when he was a Great Dane that it was like 98% accuracy.
Oh.
And he is not anywhere close. I think I was a little too close to him. Like the photo was too closely cropped. So he looked much larger than he actually was. So it seems to have a problem with figuring out the size of the dog dependent upon the cropping of the photo.
Oh yeah.
So they might have a little bit of work. But again, it's from their Microsoft's like research department, so I guess they're messing with it. It's just kind of a fun, goofy little app.
Cool.
So you can play around with that. And then, in addition, it's just good. It has just breed data. So if you just are interested in dog breeds, it has a whole like database and library of all the different kinds of breeds. So you can read up on different breeds of dogs. I'm not even really a big dog person. We pointed it at our cat, and she's a like a darker colored. What do I want to say? Like calico, you know, like the brown and like
beige. Oh, yeah. That kind of tortoisey modeled.
Tortoise, that's what I wanted. That, yeah, she's like a tortoise cat. And so it tagged her as a French bulldog, I think.
Okay, so it's not going to tell you what kind of cat it is.
No, it's only for dogs, dog breeds. Maybe they'll expand it to cats at some point. But.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've had cats for a long time, and I don't know. I never really cared about the breed.
And the reviewer did recommend, just as some dating advice, since it is close to Valentine's Day, you maybe don't want to point it at your girlfriend.
Good call. Yep.
What kind of dog are you? I'm sleeping.
Or maybe
on the
they'll
couch.
Be into it. If they're dog people, they'll be into it. It's kind of fun. It's fun. Fetch by Microsoft.
Neat.
It's free.
Cool. So my pick this week is something that I only barely understand, which is a good thing. It's Desmos. You guys heard of Desmos?
No.
So Desmos.com, you can actually play with it. So it is it's a graphing application. And I believe you can do three-dimensional graphing. Maybe you can't. But you can basically do anything in 2D that you want, which is very cool. I have used Grapher on the Mac for a long time for a lot of different things. And it's a very powerful application. But as it turns out, it has a higher amount of overhead than... you may want. You can't use it on your iPhone or your iPad, and you can't easily share the stuff from Grapher to anyone who doesn't have a Mac. You can of course save your stuff and send it to someone who has a Mac, but if it's not a Mac, then you're out of luck. And of course, if you don't have your Mac with you, then you can't use it. So I recently tried picking up Desmos, the app in on my iPad, to see if I could, because I'm taking a physics course, a second semester physics course where we've been talking about waves, sound waves, that sort of stuff, and describing them mathematically. And it's one of those things that if you can graph any sort of thing like this and play with the variables, you can get a much better sense for what is actually happening, what each variable does, that sort of thing. So you can create parametric equations in Grapher, but it's fairly involved. The thing that I think is great about Desmos is you basically type in your function that you want with all the variables. So you can look in your textbook and it says y equals, a sine kx minus omega t, and that's how you mathematically describe a wave. Mm-hmm. And so you type that into Grapher and it's going to say, I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about? And you can go through and you can create your A variable and your K variable and your omega and your T variables. And then you have to go in and say, I would like to animate my T variable between these certain parameters. So, you know, T being time and seconds. And so it'll take you a few minutes to set this up. However, with Desmos, you literally type that in. And it says, hey, I see all these variables that are basically not X, because typically it's if it's two-dimensional, it's going to be a function Y of X. So it sees all the other variables, the A, the K, the omega, and the T. And it says, would you like to add these as sliders? And you say all. And so then you suddenly get all of these variables. And then
wow!
Not only do you get those variables, but you can there. You get a slider with each of them. So I can, now that I've typed this very quickly and said, please give me those, I can now bring up the amplitude of this graph. I can change the wave number of the graph. I can change the frequency. I can change the offset. I can add a phase change into it. And of course, the most important is with all of these, you can there's a play button next to each one of them. So then I can animate the T variable and then see a wave going back and forth across my screen. And I can change, the range that it goes across. So by default, I believe it goes between negative 10 and 10. You can change that, you know, to negative 1 and 1 or, you know, whatever your heart wants. You can change the rate at which those variables progress. So it's exactly based on, you know, time. And you can just add as many variables as you want. You can do really cool things such as, so if you want to make a standing wave, for example, you can literally, as a standing wave is just two waves that are added together. And so all you have to do is you just add, I just copied and pasted the first function and added the opposite direction to it, and it creates a standing wave magically using math, because that's how it's supposed to work, and it's that easy. I've just made a standing wave, and it's incredible. It's really helped me out with school. I've only started using it this semester because Grapher is pretty cool and it does this stuff, but it just doesn't do it as easily, and the overhead, like I said, for Desmos is much less. I'm doing all this on a web browser, I should mention. I don't know if it was clear, but I'm doing all this on a web browser on my Mac, and you can do all of the same stuff on your iPad and I believe on the iPhone as well. You can create an account and save all of your functions. So I have some stuff that I have started saving to help me, so I don't have to, enter all this stuff.
I just checked iPhone and iPad.
Cool. Yeah. You can do... You can do polar, you can do Cartesian, you can alter your axes, you can do radians or degrees, however you prefer. And there's a whole crap ton more of other stuff that you can do with this thing that I barely understand. And that's a good indication when it comes to a graphing application. If you can only scratch the surface, you know, you get one of those fancy graphing calculators and you say, I know how to like add and multiply stuff, but, and there are like a gajillion other things I can do with it, but I don't understand it. That's how you know it's really good. You can do regressions. You can put tables of data in there. There's all kinds of cool stuff that you can do with this. So it's very practical, useful, and it helps you understand, you know, pretty easily what's going on, with these sorts of things. So, and it's free. So DESMOS.com.
That's really cool.
For any, and that's like anybody who's doing any math stuff at all. You know, it doesn't have to be advanced physics. It can just be standard, you know, geometry or algebra or what have you. It's great at all of these things, especially because of I think the slider feature really makes it incredible, because you can just play with those sorts of variables very easily and see what happens.
Now, when you move the sliders, do you see your graph change in real time?
Yes.
Okay, that's really cool.
And I think that's one thing that Grapher on the Mac does not do. It's not a real time thing, and it's a little bit glitchy and stuff. So, yeah, especially for, I would say, like, educators, you know, my professors don't have Macs at the school. It's all PCs. And so, you know, as they're going through examples, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, it would be great if you could show this example on the screen, but you can't because you're on a PC, but you could use Desmos. But as far as three-dimensional stuff, I think that's the only thing it won't do. I don't think it will graph in R3 or R4, but you can do crap tons of other stuff. That anything you can do in two dimensions, it can do crazy amounts of stuff. So it's really neat. And I guess there are people who make art with it. If you look at the homepage, there's like the Flash and Mario and all kinds of art that they're drawing with. I guess it's just vector drawings, right? Because they're just drawing it with math.
Yeah, and yeah, that's what vectors are. It's just math.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. So check it out, desmos.com, and check it out in the App Store. It's free. So with that, all of our picks and the show notes are at theiosshow.com. Tell a friend, rate the show. We always like that. And leave a review if you can. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your questions, comments, feedback, and all that kind of stuff. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the MattCast, mattcast.com, and at MattCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, TMO Daily Observations Podcast every day of the week, and at Jake Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Well, thanks. It's always awesome and loads of fun, and I'm kind of excited about Desmos.
Sweet. Adam, did you hear about the thing that San Diego employees, government employees, can't say founding fathers?
Yes.
I mean, I guess they changed their mind like it that came up same this day. What do you mean it came up this week?
It actually came up in another area this week. I wasn't aware of it till this week.
Oh, okay.
That's stupidity.
It is stupidity.
Yeah, what would the founding fathers say?
That's PC gone wrong.
Yeah.
Or too far, really.
It's funny, though. It's just a funny thing. Because it's not something to worry about now because they've decided not to do that.
So, what was it supposed to be? The founding Homo sapiens?
Founding people or something. Because it's too gender specific. Whatever. Stupid. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And what? I'm on Instagram. And yeah, I guess that's probably, those are the best places to find me. So with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, 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 yuck. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 yuck. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. No. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all...